Welcome to the June meeting of the Conflict Prevention Resolution Forum. Happy to have you here today. June is usually a pretty tough month to get people to show up for these things. Glad to have all of you here to join us for this this session. As many of you know, this forum is sponsored by several organizations who work together: the Alliance for Peacebuilding, Center for Preventive Action at the Council on Foreign Relations, Center for Strategic and International Studies, Conflict Management Program here at CICE, Partners for Democratic Change, the Project on Leadership and Building State Capacity at the Woodrow Wilson Center, Search for Common Ground, and U.S. Institute of Peace. So those are your sponsors and hosts for this event. Today we are going to focus on the Global Peace Index, which I'm sure many of you know was launched on May 30th with a press conference at the National Press Club here in Washington and in London. Let me say at the outset that this particular session is not intended to be a debate on the criteria that were used or the rankings. There are ample opportunities to get into that. What we want to do today is take a look at the opportunities that this index provides to the peacebuilding community, both for programmatic purposes and for advocacy purposes, the lessons that we can learn from it, so that we determine where we go from here with this remarkable project. Also, sometimes these sessions are done off the record. This one is not off the record. In fact, it is very much on the record. It is being taped by our friends here at CICE to be available for students and, frankly, anybody else who wants to have access to the information. Before I introduce the panel, let's find out who's here in the audience. We'll go around the room and let people just very quickly give us your name and the organization that you are affiliated with. Run. Pleased to have you here. She introduced herself earlier this morning and is here from Israel. Glad to have you here, and you're anxious to meet other people who are involved in this. So anybody who's interested, please make a special point. Yes, let's go back here and then take care of this section and then over to the other section. Yeah.
Chad Hislip, Genocide Intervention Network.
Sarah Snyder, Congo Global Action Network. Leon Gorchuk, Active Justice Network. Adrian Elwell, World Vision.
Chris Jackson, National Democratic Institute.
Kate Thompson, United Nations Information Center.
Paula Blatter, Partners for Democratic Change.
Sarah Bard, Democracy Coalition Project.
Michelle McGill, Women's Center.
Jean-Louis
Petit-Combano,
American Friends
Service
Committee.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, let's come up here.
Former assistant to John Sherman Cooper.
Very good. Glad to have you here. Yes. And where is your boss?
All four of you can come down.
Okay. Let's, yeah, there we go.
Doug Brooks with the International Peace Operations Association.
Alex Baird, Fulbright Center.
Lori Hickey, Fulbright Center.
Mary Ellen McLean, Fulbright Center.
Ben Stuglar, Women's National Federal Credit.
In the back.
David Dulles, international lawyer.
Harold Phelps, member of Friends Media in Washington.
Joe Freeman, senior
scholar with the Wilson Center.
Around here.
Kathy Kent, the Peace Alliance.
Christine? All right. Thank you very much. It's good to have this many people here. This may be a record for June, I think. We have a particularly distinguished panel to make this presentation today. I will. You have in the handouts the information on them, so I won't go into detailed introductions. I'll introduce each one in the sequence in which they will be making presentations, and then we'll get into the program. On my immediate left is Harriet Fulbright, president of the J. William and Harriet Fulbright Center. The Fulbright Center promotes world peace and nonviolent means of resolving conflicts through international collaboration and education programs. And, of course, everyone is familiar with the Fulbright Scholars Program that Harriet is very much a part of. And, of course, she is an eloquent spokesperson for the legacy of the great senator and his work on peace. And you will be hearing from her in just a few moments. Seated next to Harriet is Ola Storberg, First Secretary for the Norwegian Embassy, and you'll understand why he's here when we show the rankings of the most peaceful countries in the world. Mr. Storberg is a career diplomat in the Norwegian Foreign Service, served in the embassy in Washington since April 2005. Responsibility includes NATO, security policy, Russia and transatlantic relations, liaison with U.S. Congress, and so on. Next to Mr. Storberg is Michael Lund, a specialist for conflict and peace building with Management Systems International. He's also consulting program manager at the Woodrow Wilson Center, author of the USIP published book, Preventing Violent Conflicts, A Strategy for Preventive Diplomacy, one of the world's leading specialists in conceptualizing research, operationalizing, evaluating, and training with regard to intrastate violent conflicts. And when he comes, Ambassador John McDonald, Chairman and CEO of the Institute for Multi-Track Diplomacy. I'm sure most people are aware of Ambassador McDonald's distinguished history and his achievements, among many other things. Was appointed ambassador twice by President Carter and twice by President Ronald Reagan to represent the United States in various UN World Conferences. So, again, a remarkably distinguished panel with a very important topic to present for us. I want to begin with Harriet Fulbright, who we had introduce the Global Peace Index at the launch on May 30th, and we wanted her to be here again today to provide an overview of the concept of building a more peaceful world and the value of the index. Harriet?
Thank you very much. As I said at the launching of this Global Peace Index, Bill Fulbright would be absolutely delighted by this first detailed analysis of elements that indicate the existence or absence of peace in a country. His interest in peace grew out of hearings he held a few weeks after the dropping of the atomic bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He wanted to find out the long-term effects of radiation and mass destruction. So he invited all kinds of medical experts, environmentalists, biologists, and even a psychologist to testify. And what he heard so horrified him that he spent months afterwards in deep thought to try to figure out how to help prevent World War III. And that was what led to the establishment of the International Education Exchange Program that bears his name and to his lifelong focus on peace. His first task was to define it, for it was not simply the absence of war. No, after a long struggle, he realized that peace is not a negative, static concept. It is not a tranquil state of felicity and blessedness. It is a positive method of adjusting the endless conflicts inherent in the nature of restless and energetic human beings. The institution of law, based on justice and adaptable to the ever-changing life of man, has been such a method in the history of mankind. This requires as much listening, and I mean real listening, not just waiting for another party to stop talking so that you can complete your thought without paying any attention to what the other said. It requires a willingness to try new modes of thought and contact, a real effort to look at situations differently. As he said, in our quest for world peace, the alteration of attitudes is no less important and perhaps more important than the resolution of issues. It is in the minds of men, after all, that wars are spawned. And to act upon the human mind, regardless of the issue or the occasion for doing so, is to act upon the source of conflict and the potential source of redemption and reconciliation. As you can see in your material, there is a rapidly growing number of outstanding people, leaders in every major field, Nobel Prize winners, notable political figures, scientists of all kinds, that are looking for ways to encourage peaceful activity, to understand it better, and to encourage its growth. Once you leave here, go home and carefully read the website of this amazing work done by a team from the Economist Intelligence Unit. It should convince you that this is a carefully researched study aimed at generating serious discussion about a subject of vital importance to all our lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Harriet, for that eloquent introduction, overview of what this endeavor is all about. I appreciate it very, very much. I'm going to take a few minutes to go over the report itself. I have the slides that were used at the launch on May 30th. It says Clyde McConaghy, president of the Global Peace Index. I am not Clyde McConaghy. I'm Chick Dombach with the Alliance for Peacebuilding, but these are his slides, and I will just very quickly go over highlights from them, not go into detail. And while I'm doing that, Christy, can you go ahead and pass out the we've photocopied just the list of the indicators and the rankings so that you will have that to take away with you. I would encourage all of you to go to the website, www.visionofhumanity.com, for all of the detail that is available on this. Ambassador McDonald and I became involved with this project very early on when Steve Killelea, the founder and the funder of this project, was looking for people to partner with here in the United States to help think through what to do, how to do it, who to connect with, and so on. We conducted numerous meetings with leaders in the field and provided feedback for Steve and his team as they developed the index. We also were able to meet with a number of people and organizations who chose to endorse this project, ending up with well over 100 endorsements, including six Nobel Prize laureates, NGOs, and dignitaries from all over the world. After the launch of the index, it was covered in newspapers, radio, and television in over 100 countries around the world. Interestingly, it got less attention in the United States than it did almost anywhere else in the entire world. It was covered live by C-SPAN, and it was, according to Google, among the top five stories in the world during the week after the launch. If we can move the slides forward. The project was the creation of Steve Killelea, a man who made a bit of a fortune in the IT business and has a foundation that provides development assistance in some of the poorest countries of the world. And as happens with a lot of people who get involved in social and economic development in very poor countries, recognize that very often very little happens because you start to make progress and along comes a war and it wipes it all out. And you have to start all over again. And his sense was that we got to do something about the warfare or we're never going to bring about the other kinds of solutions to problems that we need to have. And that's what motivated Steve to get involved with this project. As a businessman, he recognized the importance of being able to measure where things are and where they're going, that becomes an important part of achieving results. So he worked with the Economist Intelligence Unit, the people with the Economist Magazine, the Research and Analysis Division of the Economist Group, and they came up with criteria to measure peace. Again, we could argue forever about whether or not the criteria are right, but my impression, and I think that of most everybody who's looked at it, is they did a pretty darn good job of doing it. Yes, everybody could come up with their own, but they did a phenomenally good job. Something quite remarkable about the EIU, they had 100 people working on this project, 100 people. These people are specialists in each of these countries that were being ranked, so you had access to a resource that virtually none of the rest of us could ever tap into to do an analysis such as this. They found that peace could be measured. Another of the premises was that peace is a foundation to resolve humanity's major issues. Part of what we hope this will do is inspire further discussion and analysis, and that it will be a motivator for the countries and the peoples of the world to want to move up the ladder in the ranking of peace. If we move on to the next one, among the things that was analyzed in this is the correlation between peacefulness and economic prosperity, a very high correlation. In fact, interestingly, even among the most developed countries in the world, those that ranked high on peacefulness also had the best economic performance over the last 10 years. Even among the very prosperous